The season is a little over a week old. Storylines are developing everywhere. Injuries, suspensions, hot starts, cold starts. Sean, what's on your mind as the season is what now? 8 days old as we record this on Wednesday?
First of all, I thought it was 80 days old. There's a lot that's happened in this first week. It's been crazy, crazy, crazy. Again, we talked about it. If this is the barometer of what's going to happen this year, it's going to be nuts. But it's 8 days in, and let's take it all with a grain of salt, right? It's like week one of the NFL season. Well, this team's bad. This team's awful. This team's going to win the Super Bowl. And then you get to week six, and everybody's right where they should be.
When we talk about teams that are off to a hot start, maybe a surprising start, we're going to be joined shortly here, Sean, by Sabres coach Don Granato. He's kind enough to join us on the podcast. Another win for Buffalo last night, Tuesday night. They are 3-0. I don't think anybody saw that coming. So we'll get into that a little bit later with Don, and we'll talk a little bit about Sabres too. But Sean, I want to play a game with you. You ready?
Sure.
Panic or no panic? And this is a way for us to get into a lot of these teams that maybe gotten off the starts here that they're not too happy with. Panic or no panic, Sean? Chicago Blackhawks.
I'm panicking. Yeah. I thought they were going to be way better than they were. And maybe the biggest concern is because I look at chemistry more than, you know, guys will figure out systems and guys will figure out, you know, how a coach wants them to play. They go into Pittsburgh with Marc-Andre Fleury, their new cornerstone goalie, one of the greatest human beings in all of hockey, one of the greatest teammates in all of hockey, and they lay an egg and he gets pulled. Like, to me, that's a team that's just screaming for something to happen already.
Yeah. Panic. I agree. Look, they're 0-3-1. And here's a problem. So they lose 4-1 to the Islanders last night, Tuesday night. We're recording this Wednesday. They lose 4-1 to the Islanders. And they look, they had 31 shots on goal in the first two periods. They had 18 in the first period. They played well compared to how they had been playing. They didn't score. They were down 4-0 before they finally scored a goal, right? It was 1-0 and through the first two. And then the Islanders, you know, they caught fire and they scored and they made it 4-0 before Chicago finally scores. And Jeremy Colleton after the game says, the result was secondary to how we played. No, the result is what matters. You're in the National Hockey League. The result matters. Your team is off to a very slow start. Yes, you played better. And I think you can build off of that. But the result is not secondary to how you played. You need to get the wins. Teams talk about it all the time. Like, you've got to be able to win the games where you play well. You've got to be able to win the games where you're not playing very well. And they might have played well for two periods. They did not score. And then they gave up 3 goals on 8 shots in the third period. So the result was the result. This team's 0-3-1. There's panic.
When's the last time a team went 78-4?
That's probably never happened.
Okay. So sometimes it isn't the results. Sometimes it is the game that you played. And look, if they want to hang their hat, they can hang their hat on that. They can hang their hat on the comeback they had against the Devils, who we're going to talk about a little bit, I think, in the surprising teams. You know,
yep,
they came back and forced overtime and got that point there. I think sometimes because of goalies and because of calls and because of other things that happen in games, you say, we played really well. Here's a perfect example. Toronto played the New York Rangers the other night. They lost in overtime. Who was the better team?
Well, Toronto was. They were beaten by a goalie in that game.
Yeah. So Toronto can't walk away from that game and say, the result doesn't matter. We played really well. If we play that way for each of our 82 games, we'll be in the playoffs. I think Jeremy Colleton believes that if the Chicago Blackhawks play the way that they played for two periods in the game yesterday, that they'll be a competitive team.
They will be, but they got to play that way for three periods. And they have not done that. And that's why we're talking a little bit of panic here. Look, we'll see what goes on with them. But this is a team that expectations were raised because of who they acquired in the offseason. And right now they're 0-3-1 and they've lost 4-2, 4-3, 5-2, and 4-1. It has not looked good. All right. Panic or no panic? The Montreal Canadiens.
Full-blown stock market crash panic.
That's what they're feeling in Montreal. Nationally, do you believe that? Are you surprised by the Canadian start?
Yes. I didn't think they were going to be good. I don't think that they were going to be in the playoffs personally, but I don't think that they're a team that loses 5-0 to the San Jose Sharks at home. You look at that and you say, whoa, what's going on? Like, things are going to be a little tough. You don't have a number one center. You have a lot of issues that you're going to have to figure out. But the one issue that you should never have to figure out, especially when you play in Montreal, is passion. Passionate teams don't lose 5-0 at home.
At home.
With their backs against the wall.
Yeah.
To a team that has not been good for several years.
Yeah, and to a team that isn't supposed to be good this season either, at least not supposed to be that good, you know, certainly not 5-0 better than anybody this season. Here's the issue too. I do think, you know, certainly if you're a fan of the Montreal Canadiens, the fan base is panicking. There's no question about it, but they kind of panic if they lose one game. So that's just the nature of Montreal. But expectations were obviously raised by their unexpected run to the Cup final last year. And then you have to look at who you don't have, and you just ran through it. Carey Price, Shea Weber, Phil Dano, Jesperi Kotkaniemi, who, by the way, returns to Montreal Thursday night. And it's like a non-story in Montreal because it's a full-blown panic in, you know, in the streets of the city there.
It's going to get thrown out to try and placate the fans and to turn the anger.
True.
Like, here comes the turncoat.
Yeah.
Here comes the guy who dissed the Montreal Canadiens
for 20 bucks.
When that's not the case at all. But it's a nice place when you're angry, right? You don't want to put the anger on your guys. They're your guys. So here's this kid coming in, and, you know, he already spoke about it because they have a few days off before they go into Montreal. And you know, I think he has the right attitude. He's like, it's going to be a lot of fun to go back. Yeah. You know, he's like, I'm going to see some people I haven't seen in a while. I loved it there. They gave me my opportunity. He's also going back on a team that's 3-0, is amongst the class of the league. He's playing on the top line with two other Finns. His world is a lot brighter right now than the Montreal Canadiens world.
Yeah, no question about it. Here's the thing with Montreal that really that would bother me greatly is they have 3 goals in 4 games. Jonathan Drouin has 2 of them, and that's a great story and probably one that should be highlighted for everything that he had to go through and has been going through. But they have 3 goals. They led for 2 minutes and 50 seconds in their opener against the Toronto Maple Leafs, and that's it. They've scored 2 goals since then, none obviously against San Jose. We know the issues they're going to have defensively. We know the issues they have in goal, but man, Sean, they got to be able to score. They got to be able to score a little bit of their way out of this trouble. And 3 goals in 4 games, I mean, it goes without saying that's not getting a cut. And that's enough of a reason, I think, to panic is where's the offense?
Yeah, for sure. And that was a question going in. I don't know if anybody thought that the dry spell would be this bad. But again, to me, you can fix some of that. You can't fix 5-0 at home. Again, and we're talking about numbers here, right? Like, teams that have started 0-3 historically don't make the playoffs. There's been exceptions, but historically you're getting into an area where you're going to have some trouble. Now you're looking at 0-4, the numbers become even less, and you have all that facing you. And like I said, I didn't think they were overly competitive in that game. Mm-hmm. Like, they just weren't winning pucks. And a lot of times when a team's in trouble and they're in a slump, and good teams go through it, good teams will lose 4 games in a row. But when they're losing those games, they're at least winning 50-50 pucks. They're putting out effort. And, you know, sometimes the hockey gods are against you, and that happens. And good teams fight through that and say, oh, well, they were against us tonight. Tomorrow we'll just try a little bit harder and we'll do it. I didn't see that.
Yeah, no, that's an issue. That's a problem, and they've got to fix that real fast. And as they fix that, I think the offense will come with it. You know, I think that might help out a little bit. Colorado Avalanche, they get Nathan MacKinnon back. He's a -5 in a 6-3 loss against the Washington Capitals on Tuesday night. So at least he played, but again, -5. They're 1-2, and Sean, they allowed 11 goals in their 2 losses, so one against the Blues and one against the Caps. Is it panic time in Colorado?
No. Seriously?
I'll bring this up, though. Before they play Florida on Thursday, Tampa on Saturday, then Vegas, St. Louis, and Minnesota. Not any one of those games is a lock for the Colorado Avalanche.
Nope. And even if they go 1-4, I'm still not panicking.
Okay.
They're a proven commodity. Look, I think you mentioned 11 goals, and we all mentioned their goaltending being an issue coming in. They let Grubauer go, and I question that decision. Look, Nathan MacKinnon was -5 yesterday. I think I'm going to go with his track record pre-COVID, pre being laid off, pre the fact that their coach had COVID or was out because of COVID protocols. And one of their defensemen was out because of COVID protocols. Not exactly a smooth start to the season. So I think that crooked number in the minus category for perhaps the best player in the league might be an outlier when everything's said and done.
Well, I'm not panicking. I picked the Avalanche to win the Stanley Cup. I'm not changing my pick after three games, you know? And I do, you know, I think you're right. Nathan MacKinnon is going to come around. The question remains in goal. Darcy Kemper's not off to a great start. Nope, not even close. But I do believe that Darcy Kemper also, when healthy, has enough of a track record to believe in him too. So we'll see. We'll see where it goes. But no panic in Colorado. This one's going to be difficult, though. What about Vegas, right? Vegas is, you know, they play tonight against St. Louis. So we don't know the result of that game. They lose 6-2 against LA. They don't have Pacioretty. They don't have Stone. Do you panic at all in Vegas, or do you say we're too good? The division's not that great. We're going to be just fine.
Why'd you just take my whole argument? Why'd you ask me if you were going to answer for me?
Well, I asked you. I asked, and then I gave. I guess I did kind of serve up the answer for you too, didn't I?
Yeah, but what do they still have? They have Robin Lehner, pretty good goalie.
Pretty good.
Top five. Yeah. They have Pietrangelo. They can win games 2-1, like. Yeah, there's some scoring that's missing, and they're going to have trouble generating offense. But they can win tight, low-scoring games. They can shut teams down. And nobody's going to run away and hide from them.
Mm-mm.
You know, if they open the season, because Pacioretty's out with a broken bone, he's probably out a month. We don't know how long Stone's out. It doesn't require surgery, but it's somewhere between day-to-day and week-to-week.
I love that answer from Pete DeBoer.
That's what I would like to tell my boss some days. Between day to day and week to week.
Sometimes I'm hour to hour, I guess.
Yeah. You know? But however long that is, they're not going to look up at the standings and be like, oh my God, we got to make up how much ground on that team? It's not going to happen.
Yeah. It's the division. The division allows for a slow start for a team that's as good as the Vegas Golden Knights, and it allows for some injury hiccups along the way. So, no panic. How about this one, too? Because I think the answer will be the same. Tampa Bay, 2-2. They haven't looked good. They're -5 goal differential. They had a wild comeback against the Red Wings, 7-6. We'll talk about the Red Wings in a little bit. They've given up 17 goals in 4 games. Now Kucherov's out indefinitely. They're the 2-time defending Stanley Cup champs. You worried about them?
Not in the least bit. First of all, -5 goal differential, they've played 4 games.
Yeah, which means they would lose each one of them by at least one goal.
So they're right there. Bounce here, a bounce there. Look, you got the best goalie in the league in Vasilevskiy. You got the best defenseman in the league in Hedman. And you probably still have the best top 6 in the league. And you have the best coach. And you have the best farm system. Yeah, look, dude, my nails, they're completely gone worrying about the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Here's the one thing I'll say about Tampa. And no, I'm not panicking about them at all. But the Kucherov injury is significant. We know that. They were able to survive last year without him. Okay, I get that. And he should be back. And I don't want to hear any of your LTI arguments and the cap situation and all that. He's coming back. They can't just add $9.5 million to the cap and then take it away when he comes back. Okay, so that's not happening. But they are still working through replacing players, important players that they lost. They are still working through some chemistry issues, especially in their bottom 6. And now you throw a wrench into their top 6. While I'm not panicking at all, I do think that there is a little bit of a cause for concern from what I've seen from Tampa for the first 4 games. I think they can rectify it. But at the same time, this is going to be kind of exactly what I think the Lightning thought it was going to be. It was going to be a struggle here at the start because short offseason, big target on their back, replacing key guys, and now an injury. It's not cause for panic. They're going to be okay, but I think there should be, at least at this point, a little bit of a cause for concern of how this is all going to work out within the next 10 to 15 games.
Not for me. Okay. I have no cause for concern. You're talking about a team that's overcome so much. What is this in the grand scheme of what?
How much can a team overcome, though? Like, how much is too much? What's the the point where it's just like this week, it's too much.
You think a minus five goal differential?
No, not a minus five goal differential, but I think that's why it's a little alarming. You're just replacing a lot of key guys who are so important to their team, trying to work these new guys into the lineup. And now you have a major injury. You have to say on top of that too, you know, plus you're on a short off season. Plus you got all the target on your back. Everybody's gunning for you.
And poor John Cooper, he looks down his bench and he's like, Nikita Kucherov. Who could I possibly replace him with? I wonder, who could I possibly have play in his spot? Is there anybody on my team I could move up? Is there somebody from Syracuse I could call in?
Yeah, and, they have a good track record.
And put in my bottom six, and all of a sudden, 3 months later, you're like, hey, that kid's pretty good. I wonder, John Cooper's not sleeping at night. Poor guy.
I hear you. Last one on this one, panic or no panic. Winnipeg Jets, 0-2-1. Wheeler's out in COVID. He's out for at least four games. Connor Hellebuyck hasn't looked good. You panicking about the Winnipeg Jets?
Nope. They haven't played a home game yet. I think Paul Maurice is going to figure this all out. They're a team that's got a bunch of new guys, especially on the back end, which I think is really hard to do until you start playing games to incorporate into that system. You know, they play a hard system for their defensemen to play, I think. So you need to incorporate those guys in. They're scoring goals. You know they're going to defend. That's their track record. And you know Connor Hellebuck's going to be good. So if they could score goals, which was the question going in, and so far they have, once they figure out their defensive issues, I think they're fine. And, you know, any rumblings that are coming out of the Midwest about Paul Maurice and, you know, maybe the seat's getting a little warm, to me, are completely misplaced.
I agree with that. I do. I agree with that. I don't see a major reason to panic here in Winnipeg. It's a slow start, but this is a team, a goalie with a track record. But unlike Tampa, even though they are replacing, you know, adding in new guys and trying to, I don't think the expectations weren't as high on the Jets as they were on the Lightning. They were supposed to be a team that's in that mix, fighting for a playoff spot in the Central Division with so many other teams, and an 0-2-1 start when, yes, the goalie hasn't looked great. They've allowed 14 goals. They've been able to score. They lose a tough 6-5-1 against Minnesota. I don't think there's a reason to panic. What they do need to do is they need to get better on the penalty kill. Their PK is barely 50%, barely over 50%. And you improve on the PK, if you're the Jets, well, bang, you're going to improve in so many other, you know, your team in general is just going to improve. They've allowed seven of their 14 goals have been allowed on the penalty kill.
And it's one of the last things to come, right? You don't practice it a ton. Again, new guys, you got to figure out where your team is. Historically, they're not a bad penalty kill team. It's not like you're looking at a team that traditionally stinks at 5-on-4 play. So they figure it out. And then, like you said, they've cut their goals in half and they look like a much better team.
Yeah, I think they're going to be, I think they'll be okay. And yes, I think Tampa's going to be okay too. I'm just telling you, I think there's a little cause for concern. Just that's all. Just, I don't think John Cooper's losing sleep at night. I don't think Julian Breezeball's losing sleep, but there's a lot of change and a lot of shifting moving parts there. And it hasn't been the best start. So we got to see how it goes from there. All right. Don Granato is going to join us shortly. So let's talk about his team before he jumps on with us. Too early to raise expectations. Another game. We just did panic or no panic. How about too early to raise expectations, Sean? The Buffalo Sabres. Too early?
Of course, it's too early. But with that said, I think that they surprised a lot of people. I think they may be better than a lot of people thought they were going to be. And I thought it was telling after they beat Vancouver on Tuesday night that Travis Green said their speed killed us. Mm-hmm. We could not handle their speed. And he tried to put it on his team that they didn't handle the puck well. And that allowed Buffalo to generate speed, but that's a young, hungry team, right? That with a lot to prove, I think you get dumped on all the time. Like you get sick of it and you have two choices. You can ask to go away, which some players have done, or you could say, that's it. I'm done. I'm not going to hear it anymore. And the only way that you don't hear it anymore is by becoming competitive. right? And they've been more than competitive so far this year. And you want to be able to walk into buildings and have the other team say, we're going to have to play tonight. And I don't know that that's always been the case with Buffalo. Everybody in an 82-game season is always looking for a day off.
Mm-hmm.
Game-wise, not a day off.
Yeah, game-wise. Yeah.
They're looking for that game where they can kind of be like, 70% will get us there. The young guys will take us there. We're going to coast a little bit. That team, for a lot of teams, was Buffalo. I don't know that it is anymore. And that's the first step in climbing what's a very big hill for them to climb.
I agree. It's way too early to raise expectations on what they could be this season. But you're seeing signs of a team. You haven't seen signs of a team in Buffalo for years. You know, you haven't seen signs of a team that's been like ready to go and willing to battle for each other and willing to compete and wanting to compete for years. They have goaltending. Look, Craig Anderson has allowed 3 goals on 65 shots in his 2 starts. That's not going to last. Okay. They're averaging almost 30. They're averaging over 37 shots on goal per game, the Sabres. That's not going to last. But what I like is the fact that you're seeing young guys come up, play well. I think Rasmus Dahlin is starting to come into his own. Jeff Skinner scored a goal. Jeff Skinner scored a goal in game 3. He didn't score a goal until game 20 for the Sabres last year. That's big. And I think to your point, Sean, this is a group of players that has heard all offseason, since this team has come together, you have no chance. Why even pick up? Why even put your gear on? You have no chance. And if you're a professional athlete worth his salt, look, that's going to bother you. And that's going to make you, you know, put your back up a little bit and say, no, we're going to prove something here. So through 3 games, they have. And I think also it comes back to the coach we're going to hear from soon. When he got in there last year, you saw a change in energy. You did from the Buffalo Sabres. And he brings the energy. He brings that energy. And he understands where this team is. Don Granato didn't go in there and saying, we must win right now. No. Don Granato went in there saying, we have to play like we can win. You know, like we have to play to win and let the results take care of themselves. But to do that, you have to develop the right habits. And I see a team that's developing the right habits.
Yeah, for sure. And there's just not a black cloud hanging over that team anymore. It's amazing what a few positive results can do. And they have faith in their coach. And for them, the Eichel soap opera is over. He's not there. He's not coming. Time to move on. Like the Tampa Bay Lightning have already moved on from Kucherov. Like they're sad. They're upset for their friend, but there's a game tomorrow. So and that's what Buffalo's done. They've moved on and they've put it behind them. And I think it was very freeing for them.
Well, we'll hear more about that right now as we play the interview that we just did with Don Granato from the Buffalo Sabres. Here's that interview. Don, thanks so much for hopping on with us. I got to say, 3-0 at the start here. I don't know that there's a lot of people around the National Hockey League who expected it. What has been the biggest thing going for you guys right now to be out to a 3-0 start?
Well, you know, there's several factors, I guess. A couple that jumped to mind right away. It was nice to get all 3 games at home. It was nice to have our fans back in the building and some excitement. I believe our guys fed off it, even more adrenaline because of it. And then our guys, they came in. They had a lot of discontent, I guess, last season. And they took it hard and they came in great condition for training camp. And it helped us as coaches start building right away with the base conditioning that they had. So they took things very serious coming in and it's worked out well so far.
With that point, and we were talking about it a little bit in the lead in to bringing you in, did you get a sense that some of your key guys were just like, we're tired of this narrative that, you know, Buffalo can't win. This is a place, this is a team that you play against when you're looking for an easy night. All of these things that have been said, do you get a sense that your core was just like, that's it. We don't want to hear any of this anymore.
Yeah, I do. They don't want to hear that. That is for certain. And like I said, a credit to our guys, they responded the right way. They responded at the end of last season when I was just the interim coach. The exit meetings we had, and Kevin Adams was great. I was involved in all the exit meetings and had met just coaching exit meetings with him. And they had a chip on their shoulder. They were excited to come back. And at that point, after those exit meetings, I wanted to come back, and my fate was unknown at that time. But what I was motivated by and inspired by was how aggressively the group of returning players wanted the season to not end last year, even though people from the outside would say it was miserable. These guys didn't want the season to end, and how intent they were about starting the season right this year. And I don't mean wins. Like, we never know when you're going to win or lose. I mean, last night we played a heck of a team in Vancouver. We could have lost that game, but it's more about playing the right way, playing competitive and playing with confidence. And, you know, our guys have kind of earned the right to play with confidence because they put the work in. And that's very, very nice to see, obviously, as a coach.
But when you get those wins, then how far can that carry you to taking the team to the next step? You know, I mean, because you're putting the work in. And after a while, if you keep putting the work in and you're not getting the results, the work maybe wanes a little bit here, you know, but you're getting the results early. So what can this do for you guys here in the next week to 10 days to 2 weeks, to 3 weeks to you know, get the ball rolling even more downhill?
Yeah, we know how much confidence plays in anything we do in life. And, you know, when you get results following work, you know, you've put the work in, you know, you had a challenge to meet, and it's a validation. It's reassurance that, okay, I'm doing the right things. It's incentive to do more of the right things. And when you're not winning, you question, geez, am I doing the right things, or should I be putting this type of work in? And there's hesitation and doubt that can creep in. So, you know, obviously, much as you just said, the validation factor is another, you know, shot of adrenaline. And so I'm happy that our guys were rewarded for their work through the early games, because I do think it gives them even that much more confidence.
You said that results aren't the end all, right? Like, you could have lost to Vancouver on Tuesday night, but as a coach, what are you looking for from your team as you watch them each night to know that you're where you need to be right now as you move forward and hope to get to another level? But as you grade the team post game each time you look at the film, what are the things that you're looking for from this group?
Well, you mentioned another level. We're always and all about finding another level. So, you know, win or lose, we're going to take whatever we can out of that experience to make us a better team individually and collectively. And that's our approach. We'll continue that. We just believe that, you know, we have so many young players with such a high ceiling and limited NHL experience and limited situational experience within the NHL, that if we do things the right way and give these guys opportunity and then help them, you know, in any manner we can as coaches to correct or self-correct or adjust and acclimate, progress. You know, you think of Dylan Cousins and Middlestead and Thompson and Bjork and Dahlin. You know, their capacity is huge. So if we just keep nudging that way, that is really our entire focus, you know, on the coaching side. We believe fully that wins will follow.
I'm guilty of this, Don, and saying that the Jack Eichel situation was going to follow the Sabres wherever they went this season. And I'm probably guilty of underestimating the capacity for NHL players to just put things away. And Sean mentioned that too, just to forget about it. Is that an elephant in the room at all? What happened? What, you know, the outside stuff that's gone on with Jack?
No, it's not at all. It's, you know, I even explained to media, you know, some of my media stuff late last year, they said, how can that not affect your team? And I said, you know, we deal with crisis all the time, and it's not actual crisis. It's perceived crisis most of the time. You know, you skip over a guy on the bench, or you switch lines on the bench, and the guy that got demoted off a line or pulled off a line, it is a major crisis. It is a bigger crisis than what we're talking about, because it's in the middle of the game, in the middle of the bench at a crucial time. And every time you change lines, every time you decide on power plays, you're deciding that 15 guys can't play on the power play. And, you know, I think people forget that. When you're a coach, you're always disappointing the 15 guys that are not on the ice in any situation, and you're dealing with that. You have to manage that. So in this particular case, that none of that was the effect. In fact, ice time increased for every guy. So, you know, yes, it's your friend. You know, when you have an injury, you know, we have injuries now, and yeah, it's your friends, your teammates that get injured and can't play. But at the end of the day, these guys just want ice time and they want to play, and they can turn to that, and they do turn to that, you know, immediately. So it just won't affect us. It hasn't at all. I don't actually see how it could affect us, because these guys are just so hungry for more.
I thought what you just said about disappointment and how, as a coach, you're basically disappointing people with the decisions you make. So interesting. How, as a coach, do you deal with that, right? There's that negativity that comes with each of the decisions you make. And there's the meetings you have with players during the season. You talk with them during the morning skate, or you call them into the office. Like, for you, what's the process of saying, I've made this decision, I know you're disappointed, but you still need to help the team?
Yeah, I mean, that is something that I think is valuable, that coaches, and you gain ways to go about and meet that end. You know, you want everybody playing their absolute best, but you can't give them what they want. And you just learn through the years of coaching in situations and learning personalities and people and, you know, how things are laid out, to just deal with that. So it's pretty intricate. It's player to player, situation to situation, moment to moment. So, you know, I just talked to a couple of players this morning that absolutely want more than I can give them. And that's okay. We like that, but they have to understand the other side of it too. We only have so much ice time to give, and, you know, so we invest a lot of time in helping players in that situation see and prepare for their opportunity. If they'd love to be on the power play, they're not. Do make sure you're doing your job, and you're also being prepared for your next opportunity. And, you know, you just, everybody needs a focus and everybody needs clarity. So in essence, that's what you're trying to do with each and every one of your players.
I guess along those lines, I'm curious what you've learned or are learning about yourself as a coach through this experience now.
Well, I think every day you keep your eyes wide open for what you need to adjust to. You can come in the season with a plan. You can come in the season with a 500 page book and plan it out perfectly if you want, every practice in detail. But really, coaching, you know, I always talk about coaching in the moment. That's what I love. You know, read and react in the moment. You throw the manual out. What are the emotions right now? What's the situation right now? You know, because it changes every moment. And for all of that, I feel very fortunate to have an incredible staff here of support. You know, last year when I did take over, Matt Ellis and Danny Girardi were phenomenal in jumping right in. And Miles Fee, you know, our video coach, does an amazing job there. So I just feel very fortunate to have the staff around us, the culture that, you know, Kevin Adams has been able to create in a very short time here is fantastic and fun to be around and competitive. When I say fun, don't confuse anybody being satisfied around here. It's competitive. Mm-hmm. But competitors love that. That is fun to them. And the next challenge. So I do feel like, I'm surrounded with good people that have a lot of great experience, and we work well together. So it's like you sort of feel like, bring it on.
You talked about being in the moment, and that right now is probably the most important thing. But on a long plane flight, or when you're home for the summer and you're sitting by the lake and you're thinking about things, have you allowed yourself to think about the end game, which is turning Buffalo into one of the most rabid hockey markets again, and what that process is going to be like and what that payoff is going to be like?
No, I don't think much of that. I know we can do it. So that excites me. I think that the ingredients that you would need for that are here. And that's a combination of lots of things, leadership and skill and, you know, passion. But for me, it's, you know, I love assessing and putting things in context of the moment of today and saying, okay, what's completely within our control that we can make at, you know, target as the next task. And if you do that, and you do that consecutively, you just keep repeating that, you just get better and better and better. And eventually, before you know it, you're winning consistently. And, you know, I've done that with I've approached that with everything in life and everything in hockey. And I'm not going to change there. It just feels right. And like I said, I'm my confidence comes from what I'm surrounded by. Mm-hmm. I'm very confident in the people here and the players here. Which makes it a lot of fun. And I know the ceiling is so high for all of these guys. And even if you look at our roster, we have players that, you know, are 5 years into the NHL, but, you know, they were boxed in possibly a role and they come here with excitement, and they have a ceiling that's yet untapped. And, you know, so I know there's so much potential that if we just keep chipping at it every day, everything will get the way we want it to be.
You know, it's hard to compare teams, especially when you weren't there. But in the past, the Sabres have gotten off to some decent starts. So they've had some good runs in recent past. And then they hit a losing streak and it just goes down. You know, it just hasn't worked out. Your team has been great so far, 3-0. There's going to come a time where you lose a game. There's going to come a time where you lose two or three in a row. What are you learning about your players now that will give you confidence that it won't snowball later?
Great question. And I saw it last year. I mean, I took over in the midst of an 18 game streak, and you know, the rest of the year, as I mentioned to you, the guys did not want to go home at the end of the year. They believed they could win any night, and they could believe, you know, say any night or every night. You can't win every night. We know that. Nobody wins every night. But so you can't get your team to that point, but you can get your team to the point they find a way to win, and they believe there's a way to win any and every single night. There's a way to do it. And you're not going to do it all the time, but there's a way to do it. And that our guys gained clarity on that by the end of last year, and it carried over right to this year, which is nice. So, you know, there are going to be losses, but we're not worried about it. We know they're going to make us better because they made us better last year. You know, they inspired us to, or they've, you know, they compelled our guys, I should say, to compete harder, to find a resolution. And that does not happen without great leadership. A couple guys I haven't mentioned are our captains, you know, Zemgus Girgensons and Kyle Okposo are exceptional leaders. I mean, that just becomes fuel for them, and other guys have fed off that. And we brought in some great people like Robert Hagg and Mark Pizik, who've been, you know, equally that in the back end for us from a competitive standpoint.
And the two leadership guys you mentioned are at the top of the statistics right now as far as leading you guys, which I would assume you don't think is a surprise. But I wanted to talk to you about a guy that's a little bit below that you're using a ton as a forward in Tage Thompson. People have waited for a little while for him to come and to be a first round guy. It seems like he's finally starting to hit that potential.
Yeah, I mean, he's not there yet, only, and I only say that, no slight on where he's at. He's doing an incredible job. But again, he's another guy with a ceiling that is so high that, you know, we think he plays good now. He's just going to keep getting better and better and better. And that is fun to watch, fun to engage in as a coach and coaching staff. You know, we shifted him to center. I love him at center. He has great vision. You know, he has skill that you don't want just stuck on the wall and going one way without a choice to go, you know, east-west. And he's really embraced it. He's shown us even more skill. He's shown us more capacity. So he's been a fun player to engage with as far as, you know, in the moment and developing.
Last one from me, Don, and it's another player, but a veteran player, and Jeff Skinner. He scores a goal against Vancouver, third game of the season. He didn't score last year until the 20th game of the season. It was a tough season for him, especially a tough start. He scores a goal, you see the smile come back on his face. And this guy, when he's on, you always see that guy smiling. You know, he's been that way since he was in Carolina as a rookie, I remember. What are you seeing from Jeff right now in terms of, you know, getting off to the start that he needs to get off for this team to be successful?
Well, what you might have missed in all that was me smiling. And, you know, I don't like to smile much because it's a serious business. But but when you see a guy put work in like he's put, and he cares, he cares about his team, he cares about his teammates. He's trying to find solutions and working harder. He's working to reinvent himself. He's working to you know, keep good habits going, and then you see him get rewarded. And I guess the bottom line for me is if there's one way to sum it up, that's a guy we want to see smile more. And, you know, we need that in our team. We need that in our, you know, in our organization. He is a passionate hockey player with a lot of skill. He's gone through some rough patches that can weigh a lot on the psyche. And we don't want that. We just want him to, you know, again, we talk about getting in the moment and just enjoy and embrace the ability to play. He could have scored earlier in the game, maybe a time or two. He could have scored easily in games one or two. So he's doing the right things. But it's nice to see that smile.
Don, before we let you go, I'm going to open this up to the bigger league. We're a little over a week into the season, and I'm curious, as you play opponents and you look at game film and everything, is there something that's caught your eye that's maybe different from last year or the recent past? Every year has its own story, so I'm curious if there's anything, as we kind of get a little bit back to normal, if there's anything that's jumped out to you here in the first 8 days or so.
Yeah, I guess nothing has jumped out, but you're waiting for it to. you don't know the full context of things yet. You don't know how good each team is or not or anything else. It's fun to play different opponents. I mean, last year I really believed it was going to make us a better team this year by being stuck in a division with a lot of, very tough teams. It's like you're in a, you're in a ring with a boxer and you just can't leave the ring. You can't go, you can't sneak up on anybody. You're in a 7-game series and there's no hiding. They know you inside and out and they need the 2 points. So I do think that really helped us last year, but I'm just like everyone else. I'm trying to figure it out day by day and we're trying to figure it out. And that's actually the fun of it all.
Well, it's working so far. Don, thanks so much for joining us and giving us this insight. We really appreciate it.
You're welcome, guys. Have a great day.
You said it before we played that interview, the black cloud has sort of been lifted from the Sabres, and let's see what they can do from here. So good stuff there, right? From Don Granato, a lot of, upbeat, which we haven't heard from the Sabres in a while.
Look, and Buffalo's a great hockey town. That's the part everybody forgets about this, because they haven't been good in a while, is when you go to Buffalo and it's hockey night in Buffalo and that team is playing, that's a great place to be. We need that in our league. All these places that are great places for hockey, when they're good, it makes the league better. There's few places I like going more, and I know most of my cohorts here at NHL.com will laugh, than Buffalo when they're playing well. Like, that building's alive. The city's, way better than it was when I started here 20 years ago. I think it's a great place for a hockey game. So I'm looking forward to them being competitive and for there being reasons to go and document what they're doing.
Yeah, I agree with you. I want them to be good because it's a great building and it's a great market and great wings. So yeah, I want them to be good. let's continue with the game we were playing there. Too early to raise expectations. Pittsburgh Penguins. They look good, Sean. They look pretty good. They got 12 different goal scorers. Tristan Jarry's all right. What do you think? Are we raising the bar for the Pittsburgh Penguins to a higher bar than just say they're going to compete for a playoff spot, or I'm not so sure if they're going to be, are we talking bigger things here for the Penguins?
Why are they on this list?
Because I didn't have them in the playoffs to start.
Did you? That's a you problem.
That's a me problem. But that's why I made the list. That's why they're on the list.
There is no reason they should be on the list. Again, let's just look at history. How many times do the Pittsburgh Penguins have to take a punch in the face that puts them on the flat on their back and somehow get up with a cast of characters that you don't even know, surrounded by 3 or 4 of the core while the rest of the core is injured, and do something meaningful before you say, I expect the Pittsburgh Penguins to be good? Yeah, there's no Sidney Crosby. There's no Evgeny Malkin, but they're coming back. And this team is good enough to survive until that happens. And not only because I say so, but because they've historically done it over and over and over again. Every one of those guys has been hurt. That we talk about the core, Malkin, Fleury when he was there, Crosby, Letang, all been hurt seriously. They make the playoffs every year.
All right. Look, I'm just saying that they've looked pretty good. I didn't expect Danton Heinen to have 3 goals at this point in the season through 4 games. And we talked about it last week, sustainability. That's going to be the question mark for the Pittsburgh Penguins, is sustainability. Yes, Crosby's coming back. Malkin's not coming back for 2 months. So let's hold off on that. Sustainability for Tristan Jarry, who looks good so far, but these are still question marks. That's why I put them on this list. Should we be raising the expectations? You clearly are keeping the expectations where you have always had them.
Which is high.
All right. San Jose Sharks. Raise them up? Too early? What do you think?
Way too early. Look, you got to figure out who they are. You look at that roster and you're just like, who's going to do it over the long term? Who's going to be that guy? Is Hurdle in a contract year going to play out of his tree? You know, who are those guys that are going to lift it? And is Aiden Hill the answer as a goalie?
Yeah.
I don't know the answer to any of those. So give me another 20 games and we can revisit.
I'm going to revisit it after the next four. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give him four more games before I revisit it because it's at Ottawa, at Toronto, at Boston, and at Nashville. Four more in a row on the road. And we talked about it earlier about the struggles of the Montreal Canadiens, and San Jose went in there and won 5-0. But these other teams aren't going to be as easy right now. So let's see where they are four games from now before we talk about raising up any expectations for a Sharks team that's 2-0 and off to a good start. So congratulations to them. But way too early.
That's a nasty little road trip, by the way.
Yeah, it is. It's a tough one. I mean, look, you win one at home and then you play five in a row on the road, and it's an East Coast road trip mainly, except for Nashville on the way back. And that's never an easy thing for the Sharks. What about the Devils? 2-0, New Jersey Devils. They haven't had Mackenzie Blackwood yet. Jonathan Bernier's looked pretty good. Jack Hughes is now hurt, got hurt last night in the game against Seattle. What do you think of the Devils and where they are now? And should we be talking about them being better than we thought they were going to be?
I think a lot of it depends on Jack Hughes. I didn't like the way he skated off the ice last night. He kind of fell on his elbow and then was holding his shoulder. Never a good combination. He's a key part of what they do. They look better than I thought they might be. I'll tell you who I'm going to enjoy watching all year. And it's not because I'm partial to the Newfoundlanders, because
my wife Dawson.
And her family are Newfoundlanders, but Dawson Mercer was flying last night, flying all over the place. He made that one move where he came down on the defenseman one-on-one, went outside, came back inside and had a shot. He didn't score, but like 19 years old, just cruising. They're going to be a lot of fun to watch. Can they keep the puck out of their net? I don't know. Bernier's been good so far. Well, Mackenzie Blackwood figures out when he's ready to go from offseason heel surgery, but they're going to be a lot of fun to watch.
Mike Morial, our colleague, said it to me last night. I was with him at the Prudential Center. Mike Morial, host of NHL Draft Class, co-host of NHL Draft Class podcast, by the way, listen to that too. He watched a play where Ryan Graves sort of like angled somebody out, took the puck away in the D zone, and we saw it again. And a similar thing happened again. And Mike looks at me and he goes, it's amazing what a difference reliable defensemen can make for a team. And he's 100% right. The defensemen, that the Graves, Dougie Hamilton, those additions are making a big difference already for the Devils, because they're just more stable on the back end. You know, yeah, there are going to be times, especially with the way Dougie Hamilton plays, that he gets beat. I get that. You're going to have to live with that. That's the nature of it. But they're just more stable on the back end. It's allowing their forwards to have more confidence. They're coming back harder too. So what I've seen through two games, I do really like from the Devils. I thought that they would be an improved team, a greatly improved team, maybe one of the most improved teams in the league. I didn't quite think they were playoff ready, and I'm not ready to say that yet here either. But you look, I like what Mike said. It's amazing what reliable defensemen can do for your team.
Yeah, and I look at Nico Hischier, and he looks ready.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he looks ready to take that jump, and you see it from a lot of players 3-4 years in, and all of a sudden it clicks, right? We want it to click so fast. And it doesn't always click fast, especially for guys that are coming over to North America for the first time to play professionally, not juniors. Like, it takes a little while for things to click, especially on a bad team when you're maybe force-fed a little more than you can eat. And I think he was. And I think the injuries and the time off have helped him kind of reevaluate, and he's playing with a hunger that I haven't seen in this game previously.
Yeah, definitely. Last one in this raise or not expectations, which probably we're not raising them, but we'll see. Detroit Red Wings, they're playing better than I thought that they would be. Again, tough. You can't lose that game that they had against Tampa Bay, even though it's Tampa Bay. They had three times they had a three-goal lead in the game, and they lose it 7-6. But they came back with wins 3-1 against Vancouver, 4-1 against Columbus. Are we liking the Red Wings right now and the way they're playing and the way Jeff Blashill has them going?
Yeah, I love the way they're playing. It doesn't mean I'm raising my expectations of who they are or what they're going to be, but they're so young and good young. Watch those kids that they have coming in. Like, this is what they've been building towards. And now they're starting to bring all those players into the fold. And that's why you play the Stanley Cup champions and you blow a bunch of three-goal leads, is because you don't have that experience of playing from ahead. You don't have that experience of another team that knows every trick in the book to come back. Those are the learning lessons that you have to absorb, and they're often painful, and they're often ugly, and they often frustrate your fan base, but they're necessary. And if Detroit's playing, I'll turn on a game just to watch all those young kids play. The future is so bright if you let it be, right? Because you just sit there and you forget about the mistakes, and you just sort of like, when all these guys hit their prime or they're moved for other pieces, because at some point the salary cap is going to become an issue if they all hit. It's a pretty, pretty good nucleus that's going on there.
Does it kind of remind you of the late 80s, early 90s in Detroit at all? I mean, I'm not saying, look, I don't know if there's an Yzerman or a Fedorov or a Lidstrom in that group, but at the same time, the building, the growth, that youth coming along, changing things in Detroit, you know, after a struggles for a while there, it kind of reminds me of what they built so many years ago.
To a degree, but you can't fast track it like they did. There was unlimited funds then. Once you got a sense that you had that there, you went out and you bolstered it. Right? You went out and you got all the veterans you needed, and then you said, okay, this is our window. It's open. We're going to throw money at it, and it paid off. You can't do that now. So it's going to take a lot longer.
Yeah, I agree. All right. A couple more things that we want to get to. I did the mailbag again this week, the Over the Boards mailbag. And Sean, I got two questions that we can hit on here that I'd like to get your opinion on. The first one, and we got a tweet from at @NHL_business about this one too. So we'll touch on it. The Arizona Coyotes and their future in Arizona. What is it going to be? Because their lease at Gila River Arena is up at the end of this season. It will not be renewed. The city of Glendale has said that. And what I found out was, you know, which we know that they're trying to get land through the city of Tempe to build a new arena and entertainment district that they ideally would open for the 2025-26 season. But in the meantime, they need somewhere to play, and they're not leaving the market. The league has no desire to relocate teams, especially teams that are working toward building a new arena. So two options. One was the Arizona Veterans Memorial Coliseum, which was the original home of the Phoenix Suns. It's built in 1965, kind of has a roof resembling the Saddle Dome, seats a little over 13,000. And the other one, which is interesting, was Chase Field, which is where the Diamondbacks play. So those are the two options right now that are on the table for the Coyotes. And I guess Gila River Arena might be still in play, although that ship might have sailed at the same time too. They're not going anywhere. Where do you think happens here? And would you be intrigued if they went and played in an old barn like the Arizona Veterans Memorial Coliseum?
Of course I would, but I'm not counting the money, right? I don't care, you know, what that means financially. The old barns are great. You know, a couple of years ago, I was in Toronto for the Hall of Fame, which is coming up soon, and I was able to go to a Marlies game at the old Rico Coliseum. Mm-hmm. Fantastic, right? The first game I ever went to was the old Rhode Island Reds, which are now the Providence Bruins, and it was at the Rhode Island Coliseum, and there was still chicken wire instead of plexiglass. And so those of you who've never figured out how old I am in doing this probably are now like, oh my God, he's ancient. but I was too when it happened. So
there you go.
But the old barns are awesome. I was lucky enough to go to most of them, right? Montreal Forum, Boston Garden, all of those. There's just something special about walking into an old building that has a lot of character and stories to tell. You just sit and you watch. You know, we had Bruce Boudreau on a couple of weeks ago, or maybe longer, and we talked a little bit about the stadium in Hershey, the old one, before they built the new Giant Center, which is state of the art. And that's a building you just walk into and you let it tell you its stories. So I think it would be awesome.
I do too. I think it'd be great. It would remind me of, you know, the Islanders at Nassau Coliseum coming back. You know, that we'll see where it goes, but I think it should just be reassuring to the Coyotes fan base out there in the desert that they're not leaving the Valley. They're looking to stay. They're looking to build a state-of-the-art facility in Tempe in the East Valley where they want to be. So that should be reassuring enough for that fan base that needs some good news. They really do. They need some good news. So hopefully they get it soon. Second question I got from the mailbag that I wanted to go over with you, Sean, was Vitali Kravtsov from the Rangers. And is that ship sailed? What does a trade look like for Vitali Kravtsov, who was a top 10 pick for the Rangers just a couple of years ago, but has only played 20 games? And for the second time now, will not report to Hartford of the American Hockey League. I don't know where you go with this. I worry about, you know, risking talent, for this. But what do you think?
I think you just cut bait at this point. Like, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. The kid's clearly stated his opinion. He's too good to go to Hartford. How does he ever go there if he ever changes his mind? There's 19 other guys looking at him saying, oh, you're too good. Too good to be here, and I'm not. There's guys down there that have way better credentials than he does. That's a great league. You're telling me as, what is he, 20?
Yeah, 20, 21, I think.
21. You're telling me as a 21-year-old, you can't go down and play for Chris Knobloch and Steve Smith and learn something that could make you an NHL player? You're nuts. Look, I find it unbelievable, and I don't know what it is lately. You know, we talked about Kotkaniemi a little bit earlier. Top picks are just falling by the wayside with their original teams.
Yeah.
Right?
It's happening more and more. You're right. The Rangers, this is the second time. Elias Anderson was a number 7 pick in 2017.
Yeah.
You know, Kravtsov was number 9, 2018.
Long-term damage to your franchise when you don't hit on these guys that are supposed to be blue chip prospects, right? Line A and
Winnipeg.
You know, got traded from Winnipeg. I mean, they got another guy back in Dubois that's kind of the same. The offer sheet in Montreal. But teams are cutting bait on really high-end prospects way earlier than they used to. I mean, again, going back to when I started covering hockey, like, a first-round pick was given every chance to make your club. Every chance. Like, there's 7 guys better than him? I don't care. Put him on the ice. We're going to exhaust every opportunity before we say, oops, we failed. Now you don't have that luxury anymore. And teams are, like I said, they're just corner. These are cornerstone guys. But do you really want a guy on your team that refuses to do what you ask him to do, which isn't unreasonable? There's a ton of 21-year-olds playing in the AHL that believe they belong in the NHL. One of them is in Boston. In Studnica, he made that team out of camp, and he got sent down and he said, okay, put me on the first line. Give me 25 minutes. I'm going to shove it.
And you're going to play my way back.
You're going to call me back up.
Force me.
If I'm his general manager, I'm like, God bless that kid. He is coming back up. So that's where I stand on it. I'm not a fan.
I'm not a fan either. Force me to call you back up. Do that. Force me to call you back up.
Or force another GM to pick up the phone and say, I saw your kid play in Hartford. I can use him. Here's a package. You're not going to get everything you want, but here's a package. And maybe you go to another team. You know, maybe you go to San Jose. Maybe you go to New Jersey. Maybe you go to Detroit, where you're going to get an opportunity where it's not time for prospects to be sent down, where it's a time for prospects to be played to see if you have something there.
Yeah. You know, the last thing I'll say about this is you look at all, talk to all the best players. And they're, one of the things that they're always say, they'll always tell you is, I'm always looking over my shoulder to see who's coming up next, right? I'm always looking over my shoulder to see who's there. You don't get granted this. You don't, this isn't, you don't just get put in and just because you've feel you've graduated to that level, right? You got to earn it. And when the Rangers drafted Kravtsov, they didn't have Panarin, they didn't have Kako, they didn't have Lafreniere. Now they do. The depth chart's filled. You got to earn it. And clearly through training camp, and he was injured in training camp too, that didn't help. He did not. So they said, kid, you got to go down. 21 years old, you got to go down and play in the American Hockey League. He said he was too good for it. He's back in Russia now. They're not going to get the same value in return, the, you know, that, you know, of the draft pick that they got, that asset. But I agree with you. I think eventually here, they're just going to have to cut bait because I can't imagine it's repairable for them at all. Two other things, quick, Sean. Ilya Kovalchuk is the new GM for the Russian Olympic Committee team in the Olympics. Boy, I love this.
Yeah, I think there's been some confusion about whether he's the GM per se or whether he's like the NHL liaison GM. Like he's going to be the guy that's going to come over because you know that team's going to be half and half. It always has been, right? Half KHL, half NHL. But he's the guy that's going to come over and he's going to schmooze all the NHL guys and be like, you know, there's some guys he doesn't have to schmooze. Ovi, no legs, he'll show up.
Right.
You know, he's like, I'm playing. But there's other guys that are going to be like, I'm not 100% sure I want to do that. It's a long season. I have other things going on. He's the guy that's going to kind of come over and work with those guys and identify, you know, there's more Russians in the league now than at any time I can remember. And he's going to identify those guys that fit into that system that they want to play and, you know, are going to work well as a team. So great for him. You know, anytime a great player finds his way back into the game, I think it helps the game. And the same thing's happening in the Czech Republic. Peter Nedved is doing the same thing for the Czech Republic. And, you know, another great player, like great hockey mind. When he played for the Rangers, I loved watching him play and just the way he thought the game. And he's got a little bit of a heavier lift than the Russians because the talent is not as deep by any stretch. You know, maybe they talk Yager out and he plays, and maybe Nedved's like the playing GM and then they're on their way. But it's awesome. All the stuff that's happened with the Olympics is awesome. You know, yeah. We're 5 months out and I'm already excited.
One thing I'll say about Kovalchuk, maybe, and you said it, there's more talented Russian talent in the National Hockey League now than there ever has been. I think it shouldn't be a half and half team. It should be more NHL players. Maybe Kovalchuk can get to that. And maybe he can also convince them to play a more of an NHL style because that has been a bugaboo for them in previous Olympics. You go to Vancouver, you go to Sochi. It was a struggle for them because they didn't play that style. And the Canadians and the Americans and the Swedes and the Finns all did.
Never going to happen. It's part of their national conversation. It's like Canada that way, right? Like it's just never going to happen. They believe that they're on par, that the KHL is on par with the NHL. It's their pride and it needs to be represented. If you were to play an all NHL team in the Olympics, you are basically abdicating the platform upon which you stand, which is we really like our league and we think it's an alternative to the NHL. You are basically at that point saying de facto, we're no good. That's the league. If you want to play, go to that league.
It's a very good way to lose. That's how you do it. It's a very, very good way to lose. We'll see. Last thing, we just want to wish Mike Bossy, the Hockey Hall of Famer from the New York Islanders. We want to wish him well and good luck in this battle. He's announced that he has lung cancer and he's going to fight against that. 64 years old, taking a leave from his job with TVA Sports. So Sean, I don't know if fans today realize how good Mike Bossy was.
He was amazing. Like they don't know. And I only know a little bit from watching. Those were my formative years of watching the game and you kind of understood, but you weren't savvy enough to be like, hey, this is my guy or how great this guy is. Cause your guys were your guys, right? The Bruins for me were the superstars and Mike Bossy was this guy that just was a pain in their neck, but nobody scored more goals than him. Like his goals per game is 0.75. Nobody's approached that number. Like Brett Hull, we think of as the greatest goal scorer around. He's at like 0.52. If Mike Bossy never hurt his back, he would be in a conversation with Mario and Wayne and those guys.
No, he was a terrific player, Sean, no question about it. And we wish him nothing but the best as he faces the biggest battle of his life. 64 years old, he announces he has lung cancer. So we wish him nothing but the best. And that'll do it for us. We thank Don Granato for jumping on with us. And you want to reach out to us, there's a variety of ways to do that. And Twitter at the rink, at D Rosen NHL, and at S Rourke _NHL. Reach out to us, ask us some questions. We will definitely handle it on the podcast next week if you do so. And of course, rate and review us as well, wherever you get your podcasts, and enjoy the hockey as it continues on into week 2 of the regular season.